Tuesday, March 8th, 6 p.m., we will call our Planning and Development and Extension Education meeting to order. Supervisors Bashaw, Franco, Gashke, and Kubicki are here. And just to verify, are we in compliance with open meetings laws?
Yes.
Have we been properly noticed for tonight?
Yes, we have.
Okay, thank you.
You and I.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
And Rebecca is also here from Youth and Governance for attendance purposes. Okay. With that, we'll just jump right into our featured program, the Spotted Lantern Fly. And VJ, I believe that's you tonight.
Yes. Thank you so much, folks, for taking time to attend today's program. So today I'm going to talk about a new invasive pest, specific towards southeast part of Wisconsin. And this is something, a pest that we really need to take into consideration, especially if you want to conserve our landscape. And it's going to be a big nuisance pest down the road as well, too. So the insect I'm going to talk about is called the spotted lantern fly. And this particular insect, you know, is, let's see.
Is that what it really looks like?
Yeah. So I place a handout to the back table, as well as a live specimen of the spotted lantern fly back there. So be free to check it out. Say, I'll pass them around. Yes, please. Now, this particular insect is native to China, Vietnam, and Japan, and was first detected in Pennsylvania in 2014. It came in as a shipment in a landscaping store. The egg masses are very deceiving. It's hard to detect. It looks like a moth. And so it came as a shipment in 2014, and it spread out very quickly. So in a matter of a few years, it almost engulfed most of the Pennsylvania counties, actually. And partly because of, you know, the human movements, you know, that really helped in speeding up. And this particular insect is not a moth, it is not a butterfly, it is a hopper, like a plant hopper, like a leaf hopper that you see in a garden. It hops, and it is not a, it doesn't fly that really well either, but it has a strong hind legs that it can jump from like a 5 feet, you know, distance. It can jump quite a bit. And this particular insect sucks on the sap, the sugary sap, that provides a nutrition for the plant. So not on the water sap, but the sugary sap. So we call this the phloem vessels in the plant. So you directly suck those saps off it. That's one of the interesting things about the spotted lanternfly compared to any other insect, because most of the other insects, they mostly suck on the water juice of the plant, not other rich sugary substance. So this particular insect, they breed in a large amount, and they can really suck up the plant nutrition quite a bit and stress the plant out. So here's the latest current distribution map of the spotted lanternfly. So you can see the Pennsylvania state is the epicenter of this infestation. I don't know, anyone from Pennsylvania or been to Penn State?
My nephew played. Oh, no.
Okay. I don't know, for some reason, it's always a Pennsylvania has been the breeding house for most invasive plants. Either okay.
Huh. Quick question then, VJ, because they don't fly, the larval state is kind of isolated.
I'll get back to that.
This is agricultural transportation or?
Everything, human, anyone. I'll get back to that. I'll keep the question, okay? That's a good question. Say, from the Penn State, it started spread out quite crazily. In the beginning, even in 2014, September 2014, they've detected it. By the time, already, you know, it has hopped up to New York, adjacent states, you know, it's keep on spreading quite a bit. And all you see, those tiny, tiny red dots, actually are those sightings. They are not the populations, they are all the sightings. And those blue color ones are the populations. So currently, it is populated in about like some, I think in 14 states we have a populations right now, and including Michigan, they found out this population in Flint near Detroit area as well. And recently, there is also a detection in Indiana as well, too. So every year, we are seeing actually these new populations sprouting up in Midwest area as well. So it's a quite a bit concern, because we know that if it comes down to it or not, definitely Kenosha Racing is a gateway for us, let's say. Now, the potential distribution of this insect is also quite alarming. So what the scientists have done is that they took the data from China and Vietnam and Japan, the climatic data, and see what are the potential way it can spread to the all over the world. So there was a scientific study that has been done on that. And based on that, in the US, it can spread quite a bit to the central part of the Midwest area, and it can also spread a little bit to the southeast part of Wisconsin as well, too. So, let's see. So in southeast part of Wisconsin, it can hit Milwaukee, Kenosha, Racine, a little bit of Walworth County, and you know, those are the areas we can see some hot spot for this part of lantern fly infestation. So this is very key, because the rest of the state, they may have a low to medium level of infestation, whereas in southeast, we can expect a high. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, many other agencies think it is your problem. So they don't really put us, you know, in a, they put us in a very difficult situation. But in December 2022, the DADCAP identified spotted lantern fly in Walworth County. It was a big news. And it was a, came as a shipment from a local nursery in from Illinois. It has been shipped to a homeowner in Walworth County. Luckily, those insects were dead. That's what the report has said. But it's a shocking news. And the interesting thing is that none of the agency in Illinois has reported we have the detection. But it came from Illinois, one of the nurseries in that. So I really don't know why Illinois Department of Ag hasn't reported it. It is not. Whether there was any further investigation has been done or not, I'm not really sure about it. So that's one interesting thing to know about it. So that we had some sightings in Wisconsin too. A few years ago, there was a sighting in Madison Airport in the, on the fly. So there was some dead insects actually that is came along. Actually, it was dead to be found out as a spotted lantern fly. So it can easily hitchhike. It can easily able to be transported by humans. Not necessarily as an agriculture purpose. Even if you take a drive through Pennsylvania state and you come back, it's a good possibility. Now, why it is hard to detect, why it is easily able to be transported, it's partly because of its egg mass. So it usually starts laying its egg probably in October, you know, mid to late October. And those egg masses, each egg masses contain about 30 to 60 eggs. And as soon as a female lays a egg, she covers it up with a creamy white substance. And this creamy white substance later turn into a pinkish tan in color, and then later turn into more muddy color like this. It's hard to detect. And those muddy ones later cracks up. And these insects can lay eggs on anywhere outside, either in your car, railway rail tracks, flights, or even in your, you know, in your house settings, outdoor house settings on the siding of the walls, box, any smooth surfaces, it can lay its egg. So it doesn't have any exceptions to all those things. So that's one of the reasons why it is, this insect could be easily hitchhiked anywhere, and that's why it's spreading very fastly. Now, this insect's egg masses overwinters throughout the winter from October, November, all the way till about like May. Beginning in May, mid to mid-May, I would say, it starts to hatch up. This is a true bud, which means that this egg, this particular insect, they tend to molt. So from going from one phase to another phase, they tend to molt. And so they have a three, four phases of molting. The first phase is called the first instar stage. They look like a, more like a tick, except the body looks like more blackish with a white dot to it. So if you look at the live sample, you'll see the very first instar, very tiny, like a few millimeter in size. Now, this particular first instar, all the way to the third instar, they have a more like a very tender piercing mouth part, which means that the mouth part is not sharp enough to go underneath the bark of a tree. So they only pierce only a soft plant tissue. So the new growth of the plant are probably the leafy vegetation or a soft wood tissue. So they are not also not picky. They can prefer any wide range of host plants, even your lawn grasses, vegetable crops, you know, herbaceous perennials. They can host any of those things. You know, they'll eat any of those things. But the real thing comes after it's at the fourth instar. At the fourth instar stage, they're about like a half an inch in long. That's where the transformations take place, where it changes its color to a reddish color with a black stripes and a white spots to it. It's very vivid. Many insects, when it has this kind of like a reddish color, they want to show that they are a very dangerous critters to the birds and stuff. That's why they have this kind of reddish kind of things, you know. But when it comes to this stage, this insect is very small. They really want to protect themselves from birds and other predators. So they start becoming very picky to find a host plant that has its defensive compound, so that they can able to ingest those defensive compound, and so that any birds and things, they will dislike them to eat or to be predator. So right at the stage, they'll start to find out those things. So now they're going to be picky. Not only actually they're going to be picky that they want the sugary plant, but they also want the plant that secretes more alkaloid, those defensive compound. So there are only few plants that produces those kind of thing. One of them is a tree of heaven, black walnut, stack on sumac, willows. These are the plants that produces those kind of defensive compound, and this insect is going to be very picky on those kind of things. And then the adult starts to come in probably, you know, from July, mid to late July, and all the way till about like September, the adult starts to emerge. Now, the adults, the first one, the male and the female, of course, you know, these are pretty looking insects. They actually, their four wings have a pinkish with a black color spot, but the hind wings have a really bright reddish with a black color spot, so it's easy to identify. And they have a dimorphism, which means that the male and the female sizes are very different. So females are a bit larger in size compared to the male one. And these insects, there are controversial about it in terms of how much they can fly. Some studies have shown that they can go fly about 3 to 5 miles. And that's from the report from Cornell University. From Penn State University, they documented this can fly only about like 60 feet or something like that. So there's a lot of studies that needs to be done on its flight movement. We don't have a concrete data how far it can fly. So, but one thing is that they don't fly really well. They really like to hop, they like to jump, or they like to glide. So only on certain occasions they like to fly. So that's one thing of the nature of this particular insect. And usually they keep their wings folded. They don't actually, you know, show their big wings unless you protrude them, then they may be able to fly. But most of the time they like to have a fully folded wings like that. And the thing is that they like to swarm in a large numbers. They're not like an isolated one, like a very large group. So I have a YouTube video that shows actually how big of an infestation they can able to create on one single tree. So there are some documentation that on a single tree of heaven, 10,000 of these adults actually can swarm around that tree. So it's a, yes.
Do they also lay their eggs in like a colony fashion where they're like
when the numbers are so high, yes. So they'll have a fight actually, you know, where they want to lay eggs and stuff like that, yes. So here's a little bit of a brief thing about the life cycle. So they lay the eggs probably in October, and they start to overwinter them. And then the first thing they'll be hatching is the first instar, which is about like in May. Then the second and the third instar, they'll start to emerge around from June to July. And the fourth instar from July till about September. And the adult starts to emerge actually beginning in from like, you know, July till all the way till about like October, they will do that. And they have one generation per year, thank God for it. If not, I know in southeast part of Asia, which is a tropical area, most of them, they may have multiple, but here in Wisconsin, and especially in temperate area, they have one generation per year. But a female can lay her eggs at each time, about 30 to 60 eggs, you know, during that time, so.
How long do they live? 1 year?
So 1 year, the adults will live only for 1 year.
Yeah.
So they typically overwinter. So there are some studies I've done that when the temperature drops down to like very cold to, you know, 6 degrees or 7 degrees Fahrenheit, most of the females or the adults, they don't. So that's why the egg survives, and that's why it, you know, keeps up.
How low can the temperature be and the egg still survive?
It's a very good question. I think that's where the climatic model comes in. If we show the climatic model, Southeast Wisconsin, central part of Midwest, you know, they're all warm enough for them, for those eggs to survive. Whereas in northern Wisconsin, it's way too cold for them. So these are like models, climatic models and projection, but no one doesn't know for sure actually how. So because, you know, these are biological critters, they can able to adapt and evolutionize, you know, so it's we have to wait and see. But so far they're telling us that, yeah, it can't able to survive the northern Wisconsin cold temperature. But who knows, with the climate change and everything, you know, it's like, things can change.
Climate changes every day, wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, I know, once a week they're getting a snowstorm, but, you know. These are polyphagous insects, which means that they prefer wide range of host plants. They are not very picky, especially the first three instar stage of this insect. So, tree of heaven is the most preferable for them. But of course, they can eat actually other type of plant materials, including your cucumber plants, you know, herbaceous perennials, including roses, and all the other trees it can. But the real thing comes is that at the fourth generation, the fourth instar, they start to differentiate. They become very picky. That's where, besides the sugar, they need actually this defensive alkaloid for them. So the fourth instar and the adult, they'll start to be very picky. For them, they go after tree of heaven. They really love grapes. It's going to be a big disaster for grape industry in Wisconsin and many parts of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has already reported that they have a $7 million loss, actually, because of this insect affecting the grape industry. So here in Wisconsin, we do have quite a bit of grape industry growers here. So we have to wait and see. Besides that, river birch, black walnut, butternut, willow, sumac, weeping willow, all these plants, most of them except for grapes, they do have the defensive alkaloid system in their body. That's why they really like these things. And when it becomes adult, they also prefer maples. So maples are rich in sugary substance. They also go for maples as well too. Okay.
Do we have intake for taxes tonight here?
It's after 5, I would assume they've already closed.
Do you mean like the VITA tax service?
Yes.
It would be on the schedule.
One thing about this insect is that no matter what type of instar stage, whether it's a first instar or adult, they all prefer tree of heaven. Tree of heaven, again, is a native range in China as well as in Taiwan. And naturally, you know, it is its preferable habitat. But there is more reasons to it, why tree of heaven. The tree of heaven was introduced first in the United States back in 1700. It's an invasive plant. And interestingly, any one of you guys know why it's called tree of heaven? It's very, misconception. Because this plant actually is a very notorious plant. It can spread very quickly. It suckers a lot. It also produces allelopathic effect, which means that it kills some neighboring plants as well, you know, as well, just like black walnut, it does that. It produces 300,000 seeds, actually, you know, by a single plant. And these single plants actually can mature right away in the second year and start producing seeds. The leaves looks like a black walnut or staghorn sumac, if you see those leaves. And the one interesting thing to identify this tree of heaven, if you're not sure, is that look at the buttscar. They have a heart-shaped buttscar to it, so which is very unique for this tree of heaven. But why it's called tree of heaven is that because it's a fast-growing tree, it grows all the way up to the sky, so the Chinese named it as a tree of heaven because it can go fast up to the sky. So, that's why it's called. But the key thing is that this particular tree produces a defensive compound called quaisenide. This particular compound, quaisenide, are disliked by birds. So even the seeds, leaves, or anything, you know, the birds will not touch these things. So can you imagine when you have a, this two past habitating together, and there is no ecologically, you know, we don't have any predators going to be predating actually on the tree of heaven as well as on these things. It is a perfect recipe for disaster in our natural landscape. So now, whether do we have tree of heaven? Well, people in northern part of Wisconsin or many other southern part of Wisconsin don't have to worry about it. We have the perfect climatic condition in southeast part of Wisconsin for tree of heaven. So this is the latest data that I obtained from the Wisconsin Department Ag, where they cited the tree of heaven in southeast part of Wisconsin. You can see from Milwaukee, Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, Ozaukee, Jefferson, they all have this potential sightings where we have the tree of heaven, mostly on right-of-ways. You know, even in the railway track roads, or on the ditches, or on the medians, we do have this tree of heaven here. So, which means that we have not only the perfect climate, we also have the food, perfect food habitat for spotted land fly.
More than teasel?
Not as dense as teasel, but, you know, we do have this population. Plus, we do have a lot of black walnut trees as well, too, as well as sumac as well. So. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't prefer other plants. So far, I think 2 years ago, I read the scientific literature. They had 72 plant species they preferred, they have documented. Now the numbers have went up to 103 plant species. And in North America, about like 56 native species are part of this one. So it can attack your fruit crops, it can also attack your, you know, ornamental plants. But the good thing is that it does not attack your conifers, your blue spruce, pines, they're all safe. But all the deciduous species, including maples, you know, they can attack. So here comes, what is it does, this insect, you know, why I'm creating all this panic situation? The reason is actually, they really cause a lot of feeding damages. These piercing mouthparts, they suck a lot of this nutritious, juicy part from the plant. And the thing about it is that they suck in a huge quantity, but the digestive system doesn't able to digest that huge amount of sugary substance. And not, about like 90% of the sugary substance, they poop out. And when they poop out, all the things falls down to the ground out of the adjacent plant, and they are rich in sugar. And what happens is that it coats up all the photosynthetic parts of the leaves and blocks it out completely from getting any light. Because all the sugary substance get fermented by yeast and other things, and they turn into black in color very quickly. And the black color thing that blocks the light by the leaves need sourcing for photosynthetic purpose. So they cause the plants to wilt, they cause the plants to die back. So there are reports actually from the grape industry growers is that when you have an infestation of the spotted lanternfly fly, their grape production has gone down quite a bit. So most of the grapes couldn't be able to survive the next year winter because of the loss of the photosynthetic nutrition. Plus, you know, they become very sensitive to the cold temperature as well too. Now, besides these things, they also suck the bark of the tree because the bark inside the main trunk is also has a lot of nutritious sap into it. So all those juicy materials will start to leak out. So pretty soon the base of the trunk of the tree will turn completely blackish in color.
Where do they generally congregate? Is it in the lower aspects? Because you're showing them on the base of the tree, not up in the canopy.
Say, that's a good question. Second, a peculiar thing about the spotted lanternfly, at the time of when it becomes some evening all the way to the end of the morning, all these adults will start to congregate at the base of the trunk of the tree. And interestingly, they move up and down throughout the night. Say, they go in groups up and they come back down. So it's like a very peculiar thing about this particular insect. You know, why it does that, we don't know. But we do know for sure, you know, they have a large number and they are easy to spot up.
So the effect.
So they're hard shells, kind of like almost like a beetle?
No, it's not a hard shell.
It sounds
These are the wings up, but the wings are about 1 inch wide. So this is from Pennsylvania in one of the parks.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. Supposedly he's a bear. I said, no, you need to see me. Go right
back up. Now, the thing is that you should also see actually how much sap actually this honeydew sap, it calls a honeydew because they suck up all the juicy substance and they excrete out of it. So check this video. I'm gonna fast forward some of them.
Spud, sugary solution known as accumulating pools at the base of the. Watch as these feeding lantern flies squirt honeydew from their rear ends.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Like, oh, well, I want to see it.
Yeah. That's what it's called.
Wow.
And it's sometimes
you hate these trees. Hey, you're going to get a lantern fly shower.
Well, I just lost my appetite.
And in fact, if you Google up, there are a lot of YouTube videos and Facebook videos that it really shows as it's rained, it drizzles actually. So you can't actually park your car or you can't do any kind of social event underneath the tree anymore, you know, if you have this infestation. The worst thing is that, you know, once all these things, they start to, you know, suck all the sap off it and cause the sooty mold, your trunk is gonna look very unappealing. So there is no studies have been done how much injury it's gonna cause to the tree. But a lot of studies are done that it's going to stress the plant quite a bit. So because all these sugary substances are rich in nutrition, it's needed for the tree. When you start losing all those things, then naturally the plant is going to get stressed out. So in some plant species, they found this kind of white fungal mat or something like that, which pretty soon turns into completely blackish in color as well. And grapes are also going to be hitting very hardly in Wisconsin once you have this infestation. Like I said to you guys, in Pennsylvania, they lost about $7.9 million, actually, because of this infestation.
So, some insects, like bees, they pollinate. They're very important to the ecosystem in terms of our crops and fruit and vegetables. Is there any benefit with these guys, or are they just destroy trees and plants?
I'll get to that. There's only one benefit of it, I'm not sure if it's going to call us a benefit, or you're going to call us a headache.
It's pre-sweetened grasshoppers, good for lunch.
Nice.
Okay, I'll get to that question in a matter of a few seconds. So, this honeydew effect, what's going to happen to us is that we can't park any car underneath or any concrete platform that we have. These dews are hard to actually, you know, clean them up. So it's once you have this stain, it's going to be really hard to power wash those things actually. So which means that it's going to cost us extra actually to do all those things. Second of all, look at the deck. So if you have any trees nearby the deck, forget it. You're not going to hang out anymore. You know, you can't walk barefoot. And you know, you can think about, you know, having an umbrella all the time upon you because you don't want those honeydew rain actually showering on top of you. And the worst thing is that these honeydews are rich in sugary substance. The only slight benefit is that it's going to benefit the pollinators because like bees, wasps, and all those things, they need sugar. So it's going to attract a lot of these wasps and things. Either you can call it a beneficial or it's going to be calling it a headache. It's totally up to you. So that is the only slightest benefit that
do
I
have. Do they have any predators?
See, that's a problem. That's why I said to you that the full instar, as well as adults, besides the sugary substance, they need this defensive alkaloid compound. Why? Because they need to protect themselves from birds and other predators. Because if not, they're not going to survive. So they got that, actually, from Tree of Heaven, sumac, willows, black walnut, you know, so, yeah. So, in Pennsylvania, they have some strict quarantine regulations, including for the homeowners, commercial entities. So they have this checklist they have to go through, and they need to get a permit. And so if you're traveling around in Pennsylvania state, so many commercial folks have to get a permit, so which means that they have to attend a training sessions to get this permit. And many homeowners have to check their cars and, you know, vehicles and all those things to see if there's any egg masses, especially in fall time, and scrape those things off if you can. There are a lot of later studies have been done. Sometimes a trained canine, the dogs, trained dogs can detect it compared to anything else. Even thermal or infrared cannot detect it, but trained dogs can do that. So that's interesting. So the Department of Ag, Wisconsin Department of Ag, has their own website right now. And if you do spot any of those things, you can report it. And so that's a reporting number here. There's also a handout over there with the Wisconsin Department number's contact info. Be free to grab it. Early detection is very key, but at the same time, we need to find a way how to get rid of this tree of heaven in southeast part of Wisconsin. At the same time, we also need to have, you know, a fully functional type of program in southeast part of Wisconsin to address how do we want to stop this, how do we want to minimize the impact of this spotted lanternfly. We also need to have some research dedicated towards this program. Because most of the research that's been conducted in Penn State, as well as in Cornell University, you know, is for their geographic location where they talk about chemical treatments and stuff like that. Whether those treatments is applicable to Wisconsin, Wisconsin culture, as well as to the climatic conditions in Wisconsin, is still unknown. So we need to focus also on the research. We also need to focus on the outreach. At the same time, we also need to focus on how to get rid of this, you know, tree of heaven in our region. Say,
so you get rid of the tree of heaven, you get rid of the bug? Is that what you're saying?
I'm trying to say is that we will minimize it. See, because this bug, actually, if it's not tree of heaven, it can go to black walnut, go to stagot sumac, it can also go to willows, you know, all those things. But they prefer tree of heaven compared to other things. Say, do you want to entice them by having a tree of heaven? Hey, you know, come over from Chicago to here. Now we have here, actually. Or maybe we can get rid of it and slow its spread, you know, say.
BJ, how do we interdict it? How do we kill it? Because when it's on a base of a tree, a torch would take them down. What?
I didn't talk about the management specifically because it's going to be another 1 hour presentation. But in a nutshell, right now in Penn State and Cornell University, so depending on the size of the infestation, your management techniques vary. So if it's just like a few one, you can squeeze it. But during the growing season, if you start to see the numbers are increasing up, you can put up a sticky trap, like a spongy moth infestation, you can put up a sticky trap, because these insects tend to move up and down the tree. So having a sticky trap can also help. Besides these first three instars, they don't have the defensive chemical in its body. So once you have the sticky traps, many predators can also hunt them down easily as well. Now, there are all chemical strategies available too. I have attended many trade conferences last month. Many of these commercial people have been selling all these chemicals from injections and stuff like that. But the problem is with the pollinators and beneficial insects around, how this chemical is going to affect them. It's a big question, and whether we want to invite more trouble or not, you know, again, that's still a debatable thing. Now, there are some biocontrol agents as well too, which the Penn State and Cornell University are looking into it. Some of them seem to be promising. Again, you know, how effective these things going to be, we need to figure it out as well for Wisconsin climatic conditions.
Okay, so we spray fruit trees already because Japanese beetles, et cetera, get out of hand. So 7.5s, Maltheon, whatever, but are they effective?
See, if you look at the history of any invasive species insect, including emerald ash borer and everything, we keep spraying to it. These bugs are going to be naturalized anyway. We tend to, you know, somehow coexist with these insects. So same thing, we're going to ultimately coexist with these things. Penn State residents are coexisting with it, same with the New York people. So it's going to be the matter of fact is that how well we're going to actually coexist with them. We already have too many invasive species on top of it. And how we don't know yet, actually. And we don't have much information, you know, also too, from management aspect as well. So I really don't know, to be honest with you, how well we're going to coexist with it, but certainly we have to, no matter what. It's going to be naturalized anyway.
Are they experiencing similar problems in areas where the bug is native to?
That's a good question too. In China, Vietnam, yes, they do have it. It's an introduced pest in South Korea, and they are facing a big threat headache like us, actually, in South Korea. Whereas in China and other places, they have a lot of other predators, actually, that really hunts them down. Again, it goes back to the USDA aphids, because they actually go through a lot of these kind of testing to be done before they introduce any biological predators back again from those things. So I don't have this kind of information, but in China, Vietnam, it's not a huge pest because they have natural predators over there. So this is about spotted landed fly. But I don't know, you know, how many of the DNR or Department of Ag, you know, how well they're going to be proactive in our region. And as a counties, multiple counties, how we want to partner together to address this issue, you know, that's something that we really need to sit down and, you know, as a county by county, we need to sit down and we need to address this somehow before it gets out of hand.
We have like deer hunting season, we're going to need spotted lantern, bugs hunting season, huh?
Somehow, yes, we do. But the first priority has to be, from my perspective, is to address those tree of heavens.
Yeah.
If we could nip those things at this young stage, we don't have a mature tree of heavens. Most of them are more like a manageable size. If we could nip them up, especially on the railway tracks, right away, with our county highway department folks and the state highway department folks and with some invasive species team members, it could actually slow the spread.
How tall are those
rooms? So I really don't know in Wisconsin how tall it is, but in Penn State, it can go up to 60 to 80 feet tall. We don't have that kind of mature tree, so, but I don't know what all the different sightings they're showing up, how tall it is, I really don't know. So before I wrap up, we are hosting an Arbor Day program on April 28th, on Friday evening. Please join us, you're more welcome. I have a flyer, please register for the program. It's a free program. We're gonna be at the KCC. I'm also hosting a lot of lawn and garden classes beginning for the spring, beginning from this coming weekend. So those information is also in the back table.
Okay, so. Ultimately, what you're asking is to define the tree of heaven as an invasive, addressed by remove and destroy, to slow the spread of the lanternfly such that it doesn't find this area desirable.
Absolutely. Because we know that tree of heaven is a magnet for it.
What does it take it to get? It's a non-native species, so it should already be considered invasive.
It is an invasive species. It is under the DNR regulation. It's under the DNR regulations. Yes, it is. But when it comes to action, there's no to take an action to cull these plants out. That is a problem here. Say, in Ohio, let me give you this story. How it came about in Ohio is that it came through railway tracks. So most of the tree of heavens have been located around the track, nearby the track areas of the railways. And the railways are firmly managed one. So these railways, you know, come from Pennsylvania, Northeast area that moves along. They carry the egg masses along with them as well too. So we do have a lot of railway tracks here in Kenosha, Arizona, all the way to Milwaukee. And we do have spots where the tree of heavens are there. So we could already have the infestation, or we could potentially invite them through those areas as well. So, yeah.
So the first step is obviously education, and then spreading the word, you know, education, spreading the word, and just letting people know about this and find out, I guess, who cares enough to take action at it. right? Is that the... So how do we...
So...
So, I guess, how do you spread the word? What's the plan for education?
The thing is, like, Mr. Carroll, we need a task force. And this insect could be popped up any moment, even by this growing season. And so we need a task force having actually both education as well as also to do the management at the same time. It needs to go hand in hand together in my perspective. We don't have time. That's why I'm saying.
What does it take to get the task force?
It involves multi-county approach. Because we know from Milwaukee all the way to down in Kenosha, Milwaukee, Racine, Walnut County, we all need to, all these multi-counties have to involve together. And we need to invite either they are Park and Recreation or the Highway Department or who are the Conservation Department folks to be on this task force. Along with the extension, so we can take care of the outreach education, but in terms of management, that's where we need the other departments to join in hands. And I tried my best asking for funding from the DNR folks. It's a different story. I'll talk to you in private more about that. But
so would it be, say, I would think resolution worthy to reach out to the other counties that are affected by this to bring first of all bring awareness to it, but then to bring action. Is that, you know, are you essentially before us requesting our help in order to do that, or talking about it? But
here's what Mr. Arora, I'm really struggling about. I'm an educator. Now I'm happy. To me, to step above and beyond my role to do all this behind-the-scenes work, try to reach out to the different department, try to convince all the the county board supervisors from Racine, Walnut, it's very tricky. Yeah. I can get in trouble, or I can also.
You can't lobby. Yeah,
that's fine. But obviously, you have the knowledge base.
Yeah, you can educate. You could be the person educating.
Definitely. You know, I think at the next one in Racine County one, and I'm going to educate the county, our county committee members about it. I'm educating actually the green industry folks. In April, I'm giving the same type of presentation with the landscape contractors in Milwaukee actually about it. But in terms of really bringing into action, that's where, you know, I'm missing all these Jews, you know. Because I don't have the capacity and I don't have the resources. I don't honestly don't even have time with all the other stuff.
I think that goes for most of the people.
I know. But the problem is, you know, when it comes to, it's going to come. But the thing is that when it's going to happen, it can happen right away. We already actually got the news from December 2022. The Department of Ag found a deduction in Walnut County. It could be an accidental one, but still there is a lot of investigation that needs to be done. We really don't know because the Illinois Department of Ag hasn't shared any information because we know that it came from Illinois nursery, but how much, if it is, why it is not detected and shown in the map? So, and how long it has been persistent in the Wisconsin in Walnut County if it's detected only in December 2022. Then it means that it's been there at least in fall season, you know, from September, October, and, you know, who knows how far it could have jumped in. You know.
So has there, you know, in the past, I think we've gone through several infestations of non-native or invasive species. The last one that I recall is the Japanese beetle. Before that, is still from time to time, is the...
Emerald ash borer, Japanese beetle, the gypsy moth, spotted moth.
That was the one I was trying to think of. So those are the three that come to mind right away.
See, this is what is unique in a sense that we are going to be the ultimate victim because it's going to be primarily focused. We are the hotbed for Southeast part of Wisconsin. While the rest of the majority of the counties, they don't care about it because it is not their problem. So that's one of the reasons why the other agencies and Department of Natural Resources, this folks, hey, you know, it is not a statewide problem. It is more of a regional one. You look into that perspective, you know, so that's why I'm telling we are the victim of it, you know, because it's going to be the hotbed. We are going to be the hotbed, and I don't know whether how much support and help that we're going to get from statewide, you know, for this type of issues.
So you're suggesting grab your shovel, walk along the trail road, or railroad tracks, and dig up Tree of Heaven plants.
That'll be a nice approach, a citizen approach, you know. Again, like I said,
quicker, right?
Yeah. We need some boots in action. I'm trying to say, you know, right away.
So, who are the other folks in this affected area that you know of that are similar minded to you that are aware of this and trying to do something about it?
So, the Southeast Part of Invasive Network Group. They're based out of Milwaukee. So that could be one potential group that we can reach out. The second part is reaching out to the conservation folks. So also reaching out to the other folks like Wild Ones and Garden Clubs. But the thing is that we need to coordinate all this effort, and we need to have a point to go person. You know, we need to have some funding for it. If not, if it's just going to be purely a volunteer basis, then it's going to be really challenging. You know.
So, and this goes beyond. I mean, it's obviously at a county level, but it goes beyond the county. So that's where it steps into the Department of Ag, right? So is it yes, no? Because it affects agriculture, which is also landscaping and stuff like that. Do we need to petition the state to get to that level, or I don't understand the network of how.
So
what brought the management out from the State Department of Agriculture for the gypsy moss?
So the Department of Ag is a regulatory body. So they are the one who's going to enforce any type of regulations in terms of quarantines and stuff like that. So off the record, I spoke to the Department of Ag folks about this issue. First of all, they don't have funding. Second of all, they're not going to quarantine, okay? So it's a free movement. You know, unlike Pennsylvania State, which are very proactive folks and they tend to slow down, but still, I don't know whether it's a questionable. But to them, since it's not going to kill the tree, it's not going to be very detrimental. They're not really much proactive on this. And it's not like EAB, which really kills the forest and kills the trees. This one actually gonna stress the plant. So according to them, it's a different story for them. Now, I spoke to the DNR folks. They got the inflation reduction money, quite a jump, $1 million actually. And I've been asking them, why don't you guys actually, you know, allocate a resource for Southeast Part of Wisconsin to tackle this? And they are not sure about it. They said, you know, we can try to allocate some more resources in the Open Forestry Grant. We'll see about it, but nothing came to fruition yet. So we need some folks above beyond me to push them, let me put it that way. That's why I'm presenting to you guys. So you guys actually have more influence than me as an educator.
I think you can reach out to like universities or colleges and ask the students or undergrads to take it on as either research or to be the immigration task force. And
absolutely.
Even they could provide the funding for it and you won't have to worry about it.
That would be great. Thank you.
What are the collateral crops? Corn is a high sugar. Do they like corn?
That's a good question. So far, it can attack wide range of host plants. Whether specifically corn, I'm not really sure. Okay.
It doesn't have a defensive mechanism, probably.
But the thing is that many of the ag growers, they do have all the pesticides. These insects are easily to be knocked out. So I'm not an agronomist. I'm assuming that many farmers, they tend to spray the corn for pests and diseases. So especially with using insecticides to knock down some of those, you know, insect pests. So those things are, can be done for this one easily. But it comes when the landscaping field, it's a very different one. We have to be cognizant of the pollinators because any of these insecticide pests can also affect them as well too.
I understand that. I'm focused on the other side of the coin. How do you energize enthusiasm to come to battle with this, get people engaged, and bring that along?
Bringing a lot of profits.
If there's a large revenue source that's going to be impeded by it and it's going to cost us a lot of money, that means something. Then people get involved. If it's just a nuisance pest that we're going to have to learn to live with, your words.
The grape industry is the only one.
We have 10 minutes till our next meeting starts, yeah. And we have some other educators we need to hear from.
Okay.
Actually, we've got 9 minutes, so it's
good. No, thanks for pointing that out. So.
Well, thanks.
He's a timekeeper over there, so.
He can see the call. What are you drinking, Bloody Marys?
Oh, no. It's just V8, I promise.
Preparing for the meeting.
It's a V8 container.
Dan, we know better.
I stopped at Festival Foods for dinner tonight.
There's Tito's right here.
But I appreciate guys, you know, for taking time to listen to my presentation. You know, please pass this information to your citizens.
Can you send us the presentation?
Absolutely, I can do that. And also be free to grab any of these handouts. I have more handouts from the USDA folks. So if there's also an opportunity within your own constituent, please let me know. I'll be happy to talk to them as well, too. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jim.
Well, we'll see. Go
ahead. Steal your thunder?
No. Not at all. No. I know you're. Yeah, I don't know much. Okay. Sure. So, youth in governance then. We have received all the nominations and all the applications have been sent out, and the biggest update is that we'll be moving forward with our interviews, which should be set for March 20th and 22nd, if that still works. Sorry?
Full cohort? You got a load of them, or you just...
Well, it'll be due at the beginning of next week, so unsure, but there should be, usually we interview 25 youth. Between the two nights, between 6 and 9 p.m. And that'll be at the Kenosha County Administration Building from about 6 to 9 on Monday, March 20th, and Wednesday, March 22nd.
And how many youth are invited to apply?
Invited to apply? Or?
Yep.
There were about 80 youth invited to apply.
Nice.
Nominated?
Nominated,
80,
yes.
80 mm-hmm. that were nominated, and you're going to whittle it down to
25? Of those who end up applying, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you don't know because the deadline for the application is on Sunday the 12th?
I extended a little bit because I extended the nomination deadline a couple days, so it'll be, they have until the 14th Tuesday.
Okay. See, that's what I'm... Okay. Any applications in yet?
Yeah, about, I have a few in. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Usually they mostly come in the last day. But there's a few. A few have come in already, and a few have responded to me telling me that they will apply. So, and we have this year, a few youth and governance members are reapplying as well. We only had one reapply last year. And maybe most of them were already seniors last year, but now it's more of a mix, so we have quite a few. Current juniors will be applying because they want to stay and see another committee's work. So that's cool.
Okay. So more to come on that.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And then any
other updates? Is it Mary or are you here? Do you have
I'll do an update, which is more or less kind of a save the date. So I am the liaison with the Kenosha County Association for Home and Community Education. And they are doing their second year of planning a family resource fair, which will be here at the county center at the end of April. So definitely come, family, spread the word, all of that. It's also falling within the Strengthening Families Month, which is April, which was historically the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Month. So there will be, I'll have more information about that as well. She typically, or I guess the executive typically, has a proclamation for the month. I know that her office has been reached out to, and I believe she'll be invited to take part in the Connie Reyes Award ceremony. But I, as far as I know, nothing has been confirmed yet.
I was just curious what she's doing.
That's good for me.
Okay.
Anything else you want to add, Erica? I just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, not Youth Resources met, and they funded a really incredible project to help people experiencing homelessness in Kenosha County, and that's, yeah.
Wonderful, thank you. I have a report from Carolyn. She is on vacation, but she wanted you to know the following, that there are now 7 new members to 4-H, so happy that numbers continue to grow. The Pinewood Derby was held and about 300 people attended. She continues to meet with new families and to attend more club and project meetings. The overnight and day camps for this summer have been planned, or the planning process is taking place. The youth quality, the YQCA training sessions, the dates are going to be in April, so she has those trainings set as well. And it's for youth quality care of animals. That's what that YQCA stands for. She met with the Kenosha County Fair Manager to develop and begin that working relationship, since she's new to us, since their programs are symbiotic and that, you know, they're mutually there for each other in the programs. We benefit and they do as well. And she's working one-on-one with each project to review their bylaws and implement youth leadership. And she's already successfully had that happen with the swine project. And so that's been exciting for her. And then food-wise, the food-wise nutrition educators have been in KUSD. They are in 18 different classes between Ebsola, Curtis Strange, and Vernon Elementary Schools. The youth there are learning about eating healthy from the Color Me Healthy curriculum. They're preparing meals at home, or they're learning how to prepare meals at home, how to add more fruit and veggies to their meals on a daily basis, how to find healthy meals and nutritional recipes, selecting the appropriate portion size, and how to rethink their drinks. And approximately 270 students in early childhood learning are participating in these and learning about healthy eating habits and physical activities through interactive, engaging activities. And the classes are being held in English and in Spanish. And then it's, for you, I have 2 courses that are, one's a class and one's a membership, and this is for constituents, so I just thought if you knew anyone who would be interested in Sweet Corn School, it's by growers for growers, and to be a member of the Wisconsin Fresh Market Vegetable Growers Association. So I wanted you to have those handouts. Since we currently don't have an ag educator, but we are definitely in the process of getting that ball rolling. In fact, we met today, we named the county executive, and Mark Jenks, and I met with the institute director, the agricultural institute director, her name's Heidi Johnson, talking about what the ag position would look like. So wanted to share that with you, and also continuing to move through the community development educator position hiring process. And so that job description I submitted to the institute director, and we're waiting for his approval so that we can move forward with that position as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Out of
Thank
time,
you.
So.
Yes.
Now we get to move to the next.
Thank you.
Which you're all invited to come.
We have hours to go. Please join us.